You're listening to Jay's Analysis, integrating film, philosophy, geopolitics, literature, history, economics, intrigue, and espionage, only at jaysanalysis.com. And now, Jay's Analysis Podcast, with your host, Jay Dyer. You're listening to Jay's Analysis. Today I have a special treat. We have Professor Alexander Dugin of Russia. Professor Dugin is one of the best known writers and political commentators in post-Soviet Russia. He's written many books on philosophy, political theory, and spiritual topics. He serves the staff of Moscow State University. He is the intellectual leader of the Eurasia movement for more than a decade. He has been an advisor in the past to Vladimir Putin and others in the Kremlin on geopolitics. He is an advocate of the return of Russian power to the global stage to act as a counterweight to American domination. Professor Dugin, how are you today?
Thank you.
All right, thank you. And I guess, first of all, I'd like to talk about some of the things that have stood out to me. I've listened to your talks and read a lot of your pieces over the years, and what stands out to me is a lot of the philosophical critiques. I'm a philosophy student myself. And you've mentioned, for example, I guess to start with, the Enlightenment. You've talked a lot about how the Anglo-Saxon liberal tradition, which I guess flowered at the time of the Enlightenment, is really one of the central causes, I guess, of modern ideological rot in the West. Could you highlight the roots of these causes and what you see as leading up to the dominance of liberal tyranny in our day?
So, first of all, you are completely right that we could not understand what is going on around us in the present world without searching deep reasons and roots. Very important point was precisely Enlightenment and liberalism. So I belong to traditionalist line, I consider as authorities René Guénon or Julius Evola, European traditionalists and thinkers. And in order to understand what is modernity and what is the metaphysics of modernity, we need to understand what is Enlightenment. And that was a paradigmatical shift in Enlightenment from the tradition, from the sacred, from the hierarchical order of the things, from the patriarchal domination of God of light to the completely different understanding on why, what is the world. The world was considered to be something material that grows from below to up, and not vice versa as was before. Before, the world was considered to from the top the lowest side. It was a kind of solar race that go from the highest point of the ontology of the being and coming to the earth beneath. But in the Enlightenment, all this order was reversed, completely upside down. And what was the last important thing, the man, the body, the material concern, something that was understood as something secondary, not important, became the first of first importance. And that was a kind of spiritual, ontological, metaphysical revolution, yes, of modernity. And Anglo-Saxons, Protestants, have played in this process the leading role. And on the level of the anthropology, the liberalism consists in the fact to make a very important metaphysical equation between the man, and the individual.
Yes.
So the concept of man and the human nature was considered as something essentially individual. And that was, the individual was before, was seen as something that is something last. The man was much more than individual. And in the Anglo-Saxon tradition, in the way, in the progress of this materialistic revolution, the order of thing was reversed and the individual went first. And that was a source of the perversion of the modern world. And all modern ideology as based on this completely false presumption that individual should go first. And that in liberalism, it is most highlight aspect of liberalism. And Marxism was as well in this individualistic, but it tried to overcome individualism by the concept of class that collapsed, that has collapsed. But Marxism was, we could say, more traditional, more sacred than liberalism. That is why he has lost.
Yes, one of the thinkers that I enjoy in the traditionalist tradition is Dr. Philip Sherard, and he's written on the desacralization of the world. And I think that's the same point that you're hitting at. And that's the idea that it's not just a desacralization, but also an inversion. And so you would have a kind of natural hierarchy from tradition that inverts things and places the atomic individual at the top when it should be the other way around. And I'm wondering, do you see this, René Guénon speaks of the quantification. And so the idea of individual as in numerical unit, right?
Okay.
Is this the new classification by which the mechanistic view of the world would come to dominate? Like, is there a connection between the mechanism view of the universe, of the cosmos, of the Enlightenment thinkers, and this idea of everything being classed as numerical units, right, that would lead us to the dominance of and the fetish of technology?
Yes, exactly. And that is the concept of the mechanistic understanding of the world, of the nature, of the human essence, of the body, of the soul. All that was a kind of scientific world vision that is inherent in the modernity. And now we are living in the middle of this completely wrong understanding of the nature of the reality. And politically and geopolitically, liberalism and United States dominated by liberal political elite, in some way hijacked by these elites, is in the first line of this process. So, for example, we could believing in modernity, but for example, question it or challenging it or refusing it. It is possible. So modernity will be there, but we could say no to the modernity, or we could try overcome modernity. And liberals do exactly the opposite. They enjoy the modernity. They use the modernity. They have created the modernity. They have accepted it. So that is a kind of moral choice. The modernity is not something as a kind of fatalistic. It is not objective. We could choose to be modern or not to be modern. It is our freedom, our dignity in that. And liberals are choosing to be modern, to be with modernity, to be on the side of the modernity, precisely in this quantitative approach to the thing. So they are, if you permit me, they are satanists. metaphysical, philosophical Satanists. So the real Satanism is to overthrow the natural, spiritual, metaphysical hierarchy. And liberalism is in the first line of this reversal of any traditional sacred order. So it has nothing to do with the blood or with heritage or with race. It is simply constatation of historical cultural fact. There could be, and there are many Anglo-Saxon writers that are artists or philosophers that are on the other side of the situation, that are against the modernity, as well as in United States or in Great Britain. And I consider them to be on Russian side, if you want, because Russian in the majority is against the modernity. And Anglo-Saxons, it is minority. But as well, we have minority that is modern and liberal and pro-Western. So it is a kind of balance, some balance. We have our proper dissidents who refuse our traditional identity, and they are on the side of the United States, liberalism, and Anglo-Saxon. And there are in the Anglo-Saxon world as well some people who refuse the modernity. They refuse this attitude towards a mechanical attitude toward life. And they are on the Eurasian or Russian or traditional side. It is this has nothing to do with race. So I would like to stress that I am not against Anglo-Saxon as the people, as a culture. I am against liberal idea. That is completely wrong. If, for example, this idea, liberalism, was invented by Russians, I will be against Russians. Absolutely. Not because I defend tradition, not because I'm Russian. I defend tradition because I'm traditionalist.
You've spoken of the pure Satanism of the West, and that's, I think, what you're getting at is the ideology of inversion and subversion.
Absolutely.
That flips things upside down. And what I'd like to also ask is that it's important to see, as you pointed out many times, that this is not disconnected from politics and economy. And so one of the things that's hard to get across in the American mind is the idea that what's considered conservative, so to speak, or traditional in the general American mind is actually liberalism from the Enlightenment. So the laissez-faire economic theory, right, is considered by most Americans to be conservative economics, right? Von Mises and so forth, but that's actually the liberal economy.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that is the problem with Americans, I think, because North America was founded as a kind of laboratory of the modernity. It was a modern Enlightenment invention or Protestant invention. Yes. So your traditionalism is absolutely modernist. So that is a kind of a real tragedy, I think, because the most important thinkers of United States, and I consider, for example, Ezra Pound or Edgar Poe to be real American authors, but they came to the conclusion that America is something so horrible that to be honest, we need to finish with it, because they were Americans, and they have understood that it is impossible to be on the side of the tradition and to be American. Yes. And the madness and or suicide or completely collapse of personality is the only logical way out of it. It is a tragic situation. We have the other, the Russians, we have many, many existential, very deep and existential problems, but they are of different nature, different kind. So we are in tradition, but in which tradition? How we understand tradition? How is our relation to the tradition, sacred tradition? Maybe we are perverting this tradition. Maybe we are dealing with simulacrum of this tradition. It is our problem. And that is as well very existentially difficult to decide. But I think that Americans have completely different problem, because your conservatism, your far right vision is completely ultra modernist, yeah. Liberal, and you have no conservatives, including the possibility. You have no possibility to be conservative. It's a tragedy.
Yes, it's a false dialectic, and if you look at Bacon and the New Atlantis, I would argue that it even has a darker, almost an alchemical approach to the idea of a melting pot that tries to create the idea of a propositional nation, right, from Lincoln.
Yes, it is possible only on paying the price for it to refuse your own cultural identity. So coming to America, to the North America, the people, the men, they should put aside their identity. For example, they could conserve it in the South, South America. It's very interesting that the Spanish did not lose their identity there. They have adapted themselves to the new condition, as well as German living. For example, German living in the Southern America, they are German. The German living in the Northern America, they are white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. So they are modernists. They are not anymore German. And that is very important. That is the price to pay to be American. You need to refuse to your deep identity. You could not be American at the same time conserve European roots. And in the Southern America or in other part of the world, you could easily, more or less easily, conserve your identity. But North America is a kind of special, very special society. And I think Jean Baudrillard, a French philosopher, has seen very deeply in his little book concerning his journey, his travels through America, that is a kind of anti-civilization. It is a kind of satanic society where the Satanism is more religiously pure and innocent than positive moral majority that is profoundly satanic. So in this world, in this the world that is completely opposite to the normal world, religion became something completely pure simulacrum that's worse than Satanism. For example, consider your pastor dollar. So it is pastor dollar is very symbolic, and I have seen his presentation. He is mad. He is a liar, and he is concerned only by money. And that is a kind of trickster, Pastor Dollar. That is the symbol of America. I think that everybody in America is more or less Pastor Dollar, for example.
Yeah, he's a very flamboyant con man. There's no question there. You mentioned Baudrillard. His simulacra and simulation is really good. And I think that, in my view, America is not just a spiritual problem, but it's also a kind of ideology. And what it's done, what its goal is to, I believe America itself is the New World Order, so to speak. And so that is the testbed, the test tube from which it's supposed to flow out to the rest of the world, the liberal ideology. It's the engine of the liberal New World Order, so to speak. And then through, you know, entities like NATO and the different think tanks and foundations and the Brookings Institute and Carnegie Endowment and so forth, you have the strategies of how to spread this across the globe so that the rest of the world actually adopts the simulacra. That is the American idea. Would you agree with that?
Exactly, exactly. And the first victim of it is American people. Americans themselves are not the winners in this process, because you don't win anything. You lose everything. You don't win anything. It seems that Patrick Buchanan has said once that America has gained the world and has lost itself. Yes. So I think that is a kind of... But this victim, it is not sacred. For example, if you sacrifice your life for the Christ, for something sacred, it is logical. So you are dying or suffering, you are martyred here in the lowest world in order to revival and resuscitate, resurrect in the future world. And if you sacrifice self for the evil, for the destruction of the all the rest, if you are losing your soul and your identity and your roots and your sacred mission as European descendants of European great European tradition, you are suffering in vain in order to construct a new world order, in order to submit to this completely unnatural, perverted version of simulacrum, the other people. So it is not freedom. It is something, this is new kind of totalitarianism. It is Orwell. They thought that Orwell will, it is Soviet Union. It will appear in the socialist camp. We had, to say the truth, some aspect of it, but real Orwell is coming now. It is United States of America. Yes. It's Orwellian society, because when we see debates with this poor Trump, that Trump tries to say the little truth about the things, about the very, very low quality truth, I would say, but he is completely under attack from all sides, because everybody beside Trump are completely met in the elite, I think, in political elite. And it is a kind of the normal, stupid and limited person, maybe that is among completely crazy madmen. He appeared to be mad comparing with them, but they are mad. I think he is not brilliant, but he is at least something that is more or less close to the normality. But he is unique, and everybody, I think his popularity is precisely because he transmits something that is the last moment of American normality, I think. But he, for the political elite, it is a kind of madman himself. So it is very, very interesting. These elections, I am observing with great interest for the first time. So I think that we are approaching to the end of America. Yeah. Really, because it could not be any longer. But that does not mean that we will win, that Russia will gain from that, because immediately all our problems will be evident and manifest after the fall of America. And that will be for us a huge blow. But it is necessary, and I think it is logical that finally it comes.
You mentioned a minute ago the Protestant Reformation and its connection to the Enlightenment and scientific revolution and so forth. Do you see the Protestant Reformation as the West's anti-metaphysical turn, that we saw the anti-metaphysic, you know, come about in the Enlightenment and with British empiricism and so forth? Do you see the Reformation as kind of the spiritual version of that same anti-metaphysical turn, anti-traditional turn?
Yes, it was. But I have studied Protestantism and the history of Protestantism. There were some different tendencies inside of it. First of all, Luther himself, he was very influenced by German mystics.
Yes, and Eckhart.
Published Deutsche Theologie, German theology, volume from very interesting and metaphysically talented and gifted and very profound mystical and sacred writers, German writers, as Meister Eckhart, Tauler, Heinrich von Sousa, mm-hmm. and other. So after that, after the first wave of Protestantism, there was German so-called second Reformation, represented by greatest mystic of Europe, of Jacob Böhme, and Gichtel. So inside of Protestantism, there were very, very interesting tendencies, or in Thomas Münzer, for example, eschatological tradition. So inside of Protestantism, there were different forms of tendency, but Anglo-Saxon Protestantism and Dutch Protestantism, and above all Cromwell and the Calvinism, Scottish Protestantism, they were the worst example of this metaphysical revolution against all the sacred order, because Rome, the Catholic Rome, had many weak points, but he should be criticized or improved, or he had almost lost metaphysical as well, mystical, esoteric dimension, but criticizing for the just causes Rome and Roman Catholicism, the Protestants, Calvinists above all, they have created much worse version of pseudo-Christianity. Yeah. And so, but in Protestantism, in mystical aspect, it is possible to find the real horizons, alternative horizons, by they are absolutely marginal in the modern world. Today, Protestantism is a tool, one tool more of globalization and liberalism and so on.
Absolutely. You mentioned the dissidents in America who, though being American authors, found themselves to be no longer feeling a part of the American tradition because of its inherent contradictions. And one of those, I think, that stands out would be Francis Parker Yockey in his book Imperium. And he notes that following Spengler, the notion of societies having, you know, an organic development and life and flourishing and then a death period. Is that why you see the American order coming to an end in this kind of Spenglerian sense?
Yes, more or less. I appreciate Joachim. And I think that, for example, why I should rather pay attention to what I'm saying, because I was dissident in the Soviet time, and I know what it means to be against the system where you live. So I'm not became pro-Soviet after the fall of the Soviet Union. Before, I was against, I was dissident. So I was dissident against my own society, against my family, my ambience. So I understand American dissidents very well, because I was dissident. And for the some part, I am dissident, because I'm not conformist, and I defend tradition and Russia not because, for example, I didn't defend Soviet Union, not because I'm Russian or Soviet. So it is we need to appreciate this huge dignity of the people, that of the men that could say no to what majority think, to the society where they live in. And that is very important in order to conserve and to affirm our human identity. We could always say no or say yes to what is around us. So I think that Parker Yockey was one of the dissident from the right, the dissident from the left. They are supported by the other special part of modern world, leftist branch of modernity. Mm-hmm. But right nonconformists are completely crashed in this situation, not only during their life, but as well as after their death. So I would like to say that the brave people in the United States and in the West who had the courage to fight against the prevalent evil of their modern civilization in the name of the real Europe and the real West. So I have all respect for such people. But I think that concerning Spengler has shown that mechanistic transformation from organism to mechanism, from organic way of life to mechanic way of death. Mm-hmm. It is a kind of that last stage of transformation from culture to the civilization. It's mm-hmm. typical German understanding of what is culture and what is civilization. Maybe in English tradition, there is not so easy to understand the difference, but the difference is as a difference between organic being and mechanic apparatus, mechanic artificial creation. So I think that the modernity and the globalist tendency is the end of this mechanizational process. We could kill something living, but we could not create life. That is a satanic claim, the claim of devil and antichrist to create life, mm-hmm. but he could not, because the life is given only by God. And that is very important difference. So civilization in the Spenglerian term concept is something that is mechanically constructed. Mm-hmm. It is a kind of devilish creation that is completely, it's a kind of simulacrum. And I think that the most important feature of the globalist modernity is that it is really dead inside, that has no inner real life.
Yes, you have mentioned what I thought was the really interesting insight was the idea of the atomistic individualism idea. What this does is it's intimately connected to the revolutionary idea of negative liberty, that liberty or freedom can be had in the absence of law. In my understanding, my perspective, law itself is what grounds freedom. And without a notion of personhood, the idea of freedom itself is nonsensical. There's no reason to believe in freedom without the presupposition of personhood. And personhood is grounded in law and in metaphysics. And so you pointed out that the erasing of all collective groupings, which I take to be real metaphysical unities, or what we might call universals or forms or whatever, humanity, male, female, gender, right? These things are real, but liberalism, the modern modernity itself, inherent within it, it must oppose all of these collective groupings. So I thought that was a great insight.
Absolutely. You are completely right. First of all, individual is purely negative concept. Individual is unity or singularity without any links to the collectivity. And liberation and liberalism insists that individuals should be liberated from what? From any connections to the collective identity, to the church, to the nation, to the family, to the gender. And so this individualism is a kind of not only something given, something taken for granted. It is a kind of moral ideal. So we are not individualistic, individual enough. We should become more and more and more individualistic, and the destruction of the family and the homosexual marriages and the transhumanism as the next step. It is all necessary aspect of progress of liberalism. So it is the via conscious and voluntary refuse to any form of collective identity. And the concept of negative liberty, that was already seen by the fathers of liberalism, or, for example, John Stuart Mill. He affirmed, one of the Anglo-Saxon Great Britain author, English author, who insisted that there is difference between liberty and the freedom. The liberty is purely negative concept, because it's liberty from any kind of connections. And freedom is the positive concept. It is idea how to use this liberty. And for liberalism, for the classical liberalism, we could speak only politically, only about negative liberty. Mm-hmm. Because if we would prescribe some kind of positive liberty, that will limit the negative liberty. So liberalism, it is negativism. Philosophically, it is not only my accusation from the opponents. It is a kind of most important feature of liberalism. It's a negative, nihilistic attitude toward personality, toward any kind of collective identity. So it is very interesting that we could not be liberal and not be pro-gay marriage, or be liberal and not be pro-radicalization of incest, or we could not be liberal and be against transhumanistic experiences, because the concept of human being, of the man, is as well collective identity. So we need to destroy it, being liberals. Mm-hmm. So that is a very, very important tendency. To be liberal is to be satanist. It's the same, absolutely the same. But to be liberals, worse than to be satanist, because the satanist could understand sometimes a kind of weakness of his our personality in front of some maybe negative divinity. But liberalism is so satisfied with himself, so he couldn't understand that there could exist something greater than himself. It's a kind of pure satanism. He considered to be Satan himself. So it is a kind of the utmost form of
yes, right. You said that liberalism is nihilistic and it pretends to be universal. And what I'm curious about is that you've also pointed out that there's a kind of logic to it, though, where it follows kind of its own assumptions out to its logical conclusions. And just something that's always been curious to me is, how does an evil philosophy, something nihilistic, at the same time have logical conclusions? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, but logic is not so easy. Logos and logic is not so easy thing, because the logic has two aspects. The origin of the logic is something illogical, and that is much more positive. It is intellect in the philosophical sense. So reason as logic is only one part, calculational part, rational part of intellect that is much more global and holistic. Uh-huh. And on one point, logic is irrational because of intellectual intuition that is super-rational. But at the same time, logic is at the same time infra-rational, because being applied to lower and lower aspect of the reality, it being logical, it becomes more and more infra-rational. So, for example, modern economy and modern obsession with material aspect, with not only with body, but today body is too fascist as a concept, too holistic. Uh-huh. So we need to consider the parts, bodily parts. So we need to free bodily parts, or improve bodily parts, and liberate them from the body, because the body is a kind of concentrational camp with Hitler as the brain. So the postmodernist project is to liberate the bodily parts. from the body as conservative Russian Putin's concept. Because everything that is whole, that is integral, is considered, is suspected to be more or less Nazi or Russian or whatever. So I think that the logical conclusion of liberalism will be completely infra-rationality. So we will basculate, we will fall down in the pure infrarational concern that that appear to be yet a little bit rational. So I think that is what is going on today, because there are some rationality employed in the promotion of homosexual right, and the kind of obsession with it is almost mad, yes, seeing from the distance. But inside of it, there is some logical of liberation of individuality. So what appears to be mad or completely perversion or obsession, it has its own logic. Carl Gustav Jung has shown that the behavior of every psychopath, every insane person finally had its own logic. Yeah. So I think that it is the logic of complete craziness that we are dealing with now.
Yes, I would agree. You've spoken. I studied phenomenology in my graduate studies as well, and you've written a lot about Heidegger as the most important Western philosopher. Could you give some words on why you see Heidegger as someone that's very important in Western philosophy?
I have written four big books on Heidegger, and one of them is translated. First one is translated in English and is published by Washington Publishers in the United States. So it is a very huge and large topics.
Well, the apocalypticism that you speak of.
Yes, I think that Heidegger is a guy. He has summarized the European logos. Okay. He is brilliant because he is all. For example, every European that has any price, intellectual price, any weight, any sense, any meaning in the life, he is Heideggerian in some sense because Heidegger thought for every European. There are he tried to understand the last reality of what is what means to be European, what's mean to be modern, means to be German, what means to be Greek and Latin in the origin. So it is a kind of thinker that is a kind of, maybe it is a kind of messenger, a kind of prophetic personality that express in himself the destiny of civilization. And if we are reading Heidegger with enough attention, we will understand everything, not only phenomenology of Husserl, not only Hegel, not only Marx, not only modern European philosophy, but as well he has given the key to understand Aristotle better than anybody else. To understand, maybe his misunderstanding of Plato is much more relevant and important than understanding of his direct followers and admirers. So Heidegger is so deep. Heidegger is so clear. He is so honest and so generous. I think that he is a kind of summary of European tradition. And it is, for me, it is completely nonsense that European don't don't understand Heidegger in the manner, the measure they should to do, because that is the same as understand yourself. If you don't understand Heidegger, you don't understand nothing in your tradition.
Interesting. Yes, I remember some have called him a new Plato.
Yes, he is the prince of philosophers. I think he is not only the last of philosophers. Nietzsche was last of philosophers. He is the one that came after the last of philosophers. That is very important. And his idea of new beginning is something eschatological. He was completely misunderstood by Julius Evola, but the right in general, by traditionalists, but he is essential. I think without Heidegger, we could not understand absolutely nothing.
Changing a little bit to geopolitics, you've written about the land power, you've spoken about this as well, and the merchant sea power. So the Atlanticists representing, of course, the merchant sea power, and Russia and perhaps China or Eurasia representing the land power. Do you see this being played out as a spiritual battle?
I think that there are different level of analysis, and I think that sea power and land power, they are two form of universal symmetry. Mm. That I have with great astonishment, I have discovered the same attitude in the Proclus, and the Neoplatonist philosopher of the fifth century mm-hmm. after Christ, who has described in the same terms the relations between Athenians and the people of Atlantis Island in the Plato's tale. So for him, the land was the fixed series of the spiritual manifestations, and the sea was the chaotic and liquid society, using the term of Sigmund Bauman. So liquid society against fixed society, land against sea. I think they're both concepts are purely metaphysical. So we could not imagine third term, for example, spiritual power, because any spirituality should be necessarily or land power or sea power mm-hmm. or Eurasianist or Atlanticist. So I think we could not regard them as something conjectural or situational or something that is secondary. Because two forms of spirituality we could easily find in the religion. For example, there is Orthodox continental religion, and there is Protestant sea power religion. So the same religion, the same Christ, the same church, the same origin, the same claims, but the spirit and the style and the essence of these two branches of the Christian civilization are completely opposite. And the geopolitics plays here the most important part.
Mm-hmm. So,
sorry, I should in some minutes go. So yes. if I would prefer to conclude.
Okay, thank you. One last point then. I think that one great point you've made is that you have not the liberty to be illiberal, and that I think sums up the tyranny of liberalism.
Yes, I'm calling that third totalitarianism. We had first totalitarianism that was Soviet, the second totalitarianism that was Nazi, and there is third totalitarianism. It is liberal. So, for example, you have no right. You are not free to not be liberal. So, first of all, liberals could tolerate everybody except those who are not liberal. That is completely Orwellian attitude. And more than that, the liberty should signify exactly what liberals say it signifies. For example, if you have the other concept of liberty or other subject of liberty, for example, not individual, but people the tradition or some collective or family, including today family, you are wrong and you should be suppressed. We are now in pure form of totalitarianism. It is not only political correctness, because political correctness was and say up to the certain point very very positive, because you should not. It is a kind of rule of behavior. You should not behave yourself as a swine, for example, in the society. Oh, you could, but it is not desirable for the other. So political correctness, we could not really make racist statement. But little by little, this idea not to make a racist statement became the form of racist. But because now if someone makes a non-political correct statement, he will be excluded from the society. So welcome to the racism from the other side. So I think that the West, and above all liberals and Anglo-Saxon, are essentially racists. And much more racist than Germans, for example. And I think that biological racism of Hitler was imposed by Anglo-Saxon authors and yep. by colonialistic experience. And I think that that was the weakest point of National Socialism. It's racism. And I really hate that. But I see that the real racism today is liberalism, because it is much, much deeper than biological racism. It is a kind of spiritual, cultural racism. If you're not correct, if you are not with the United States, with liberal, with Hillary, so you are the enemy, and you will pay for that. That is a kind of obsession. So I think that liberalism is completely means destruction of any form of real freedom. So or freedom or liberalism.
Excellent. All right. And the book is The Fourth Political Theory, as well as many other titles on Heidegger, on Russian geopolitics, as well as Putin versus Putin. And you can find his work at Fourth Political Theory, if you Google that, that is 4pt.su.
You're listening to Jay's Analysis, integrating film, philosophy, geopolitics, literature, history, economics, intrigue, and espionage, only at jaysanalysis.com. And now, Jay's Analysis Podcast, with your host, Jay Dyer.